2-2. Line drive. Here comes Wade. Here's the throw. He's safe. And the Yankees walk off into the postseason.
Nix. Trying to make magic. Still on his feet, and then chucks it to the end zone for a touchdown to Tyler Fromm.
From 56. On its way. It is off the goalpost. No good. You can hear the doink.
Minus three. With Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to Minus 3, presented as always by FanDuel. Do us a favor, bet along with us, FanDuel.com, and make sure you use the promo code Minus 3, that's the word minus, the number 3, and play along with us at ExtraPoints.com in the arcade. Good times there. The whole gang at the Extra Points Network, play against us, win some fun prizes. Eddie Spaghetti, let's jump in on the winners, the losers, and otherwise of the weekend that was in sports. You were back in New York City watching the New York Yankees get into the playoff. This leads us to a nine-game showdown with the Boston Red Sox, Nathan Eovaldi, Gerrit Cole. All numbers suggest that Gerrit Cole should be able to get this done. It's October. It's time for power pitchers to get it done. I want to talk about that with our guest because I do think that that translates into or is an interesting analogy for pro football. We'll get into that with Jason Luck and Fora, one of the insiders that you see on your TV and otherwise every weekend yapping about this, that, and the other. In pro football, we'll talk about the AFC North with him. Eddie Spaghetti, quick pick from you, though. Red Sox, Yanks. You feeling confident in the one-game series here?
I got to ride with the Yanks here. I mean, that game was so nerve-wracking and so stressful versus the Rays, who are a great team. And the way the Yankees just held on, it was 0-0 the whole entire game. Didn't get their second hit until, I think, the top of the ninth. And luckily, you know, Rizzo came through, got a man on second and third, and then Judge at the plate, who of all people, the most clutcher in the team by far. Aaron Judge slams that hard single with the infield at a weird positioning, and that squeezes through and he drives the run home. That was a great feeling for them, and I feel pretty good about it. I mean, Gerrit Cole,
reminiscent of Luis Gonzalez back in 2001, almost winning the series on a hit that looked like that.
That was a weak bloop. He barely got a piece of Mariano's cutter when Luis Gonzalez did that. That still is ingrained in my brain. It makes me quite upset, even if I was a young kid. But yeah, looking forward to Cole. And I think this is why we paid him the big bucks. I think he's ready for this. He wants to win as a Yankee. He was a Yankee fan growing up. This is his time to shine. They have to win. They have to get deep in the postseason in the Gerrit Cole Yankees era. And, you know, this team's been through a lot this season. I like him a lot to beat the Sox here. That'd be a really great feeling. If they lose to the Sox, I think I'm going to retire from podcasting.
Well, you have the Dodgers and the Cards hooking up on Wednesday night. We'll get into that with Cousin Sal and Martin Weiss and the rest on Extra Points. Make sure you're listening to Against All Odds as well as those games are unfolding here. Let's talk about, like I say, the winners and the losers of this past weekend. Brady won the game. I don't know if you heard, he went back to Foxborough. He did. And he saw some of his old pals that he used to play with there, including his former head coach. Brady wins the game. I think Mac Jones wins the game too. I was happy for him to throw a touchdown pass. And I said it watching the game that I know he's a 22-year-old guy who's a multimillionaire who gets to play a sport for a living, and he won the Heisman Trophy and the national championship. So he certainly doesn't need my support. He's got plenty going for him already. But in that spot, hearing all the cheers for the other QB, I felt like good for him to make a play and get some cheers from those fans. And I, as far as that goes, I think the big winners were Patriots fans too, because now they see a path that they can get by without their hero Brady. And I think Belichick won too. I think he reminded Pro Football, we'll see where this shakes out for New England over the course of the season, because they're now 1-3. And now, you know, so are they going to win the division? I don't know about that, but Belichick did remind everybody, I guess, for one 60-minute stretch that he can. I wouldn't say he owned Brady, but he made Brady look human, and that's the Belichick magic. And I guess, do I have to back off of saying that Belichick and the Patriots fans are the big winners there? Because Now you see when you put those two together why they won so many Super Bowls together. Bucks emerge 3-1. Pats, like I say, 1-3. So speaking of winners and losers, that's one it looks like I'm going to lose. A season prediction that I gave you was that the Patriots were going to win the AFC East. The Bills tracking powerfully towards that, about at the quarter pole here, despite that weird loss in week one to Pittsburgh. That one against the Steelers now looms as some weird anomaly for both sides of things, because since that game, the Bills have been plumb dominant. The Steelers have been Jaguars level, powerful on offense. I did go 4-4 on Sunday, though, with my picks. I told you so. Time for a quick I told you so, Eddie Spaghetti, and otherwise, open your ears. I told you the Chiefs -7. That came to pass. I told you the Browns would win in Minnesota. By that point, they did cover that. The Giants and the Saints down in New Orleans said take the over there. That went over thanks in part to the overtime. And the Cowboys took care of the Panthers with relative ease. Little scare there, I guess, the legs of Sam Darnold making an impact in the first half. But the Cowboys pulled away. And if you look at the remaining schedule for Dallas, they're going to be 12-5-ish, maybe better. They're going to be a factor come January. Spoiler alert, I'm sticking with the Buccaneers there. But now Arizona looking interesting. The NFC West, the best division in football. Seattle saved its season at least for another week, or at least till Thursday when they will host the Los Angeles Rams. But the Arizona Cardinals all alone in the NFC West. Wow. That's where they are now. And do you think that would you bet the cards right now, Eddie Spaghetti, to win that division? Rams, Niners, Seahawks?
I was still not as low on the Seahawks as you and some of the folks at EP are. I still believe in Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson does not have losing seasons. I liked him to win MVPs. I thought they were going to throw the ball a ton just to make sure that he stays in Seattle, which obviously has been a big question mark, especially following this season, because who knows where he'll end up. But man, what, like, a Super Bowl between, let's just say, the Cards and the Bills would be like the most fun Super Bowl we could possibly get right now. Like, two fresh teams, a team like the Bills that deserve to be there. Then you have this offense, this crazy offense with the Cardinals, with Kyler, who is just scrambling all over the place. He's healthy again, because last season, midseason, when he got hurt, he was not the same player. But with that receiving core, the running game has been good enough. And then, you know, surprisingly, J.J. Watt still has a lot left in the tank. That defense is not as bad as we thought. And that would be a really, really fun matchup to see a Josh Allen slinging down the field and Kyler Murray running across field from left to right. That would be a matchup that I'd love to see.
Man, I'm sick in my balls about that. I wanted the Cards. I was going to take the Cards. I didn't like the number on that. And I ultimately went with the Rams because Sean McVay had owned Cliff Kingsbury. Now that stink is washed off Kingsbury. So I don't know. Once you start washing off those kind of things, like, well, but he can, this is what's in his way, and that's what puts a ceiling on how far they can go. Now that's done. Now Sean McVay doesn't own Cliff Kingsbury. So future appears bright there, but boy, that is a rugged division. But those divisional games matter. And that's going to take me into a city getting torn apart emotionally and spiritually because of their pro football team now being 1-3. High hopes on the banks of the Three Rivers. For some, a lot of people for a year have been saying since they started to fall apart down the stretch in 2020 that they had to move on from Ben Roethlisberger. I'm going to hold. I'm sitting at the 21 table, and I could change my opinion and update it and listen, I can see that Roethlisberger is missing some throws along the way that would swing the game. They are 1-3. They're two games behind everybody else in the division, which is bleak looking stuff. But those division games still matter. They're in the hole because they lost at home to the Bengals. I know this might sound loco, everybody. In that division, they still have a chance. Do they have a chance to go to the Super Bowl? Very likely no. Do I think that that they can win two in a row starting against the Broncos in Hines and then beat a good, not great Seahawks team in Hines, get into the bye, come out of it, see the Browns on the other side? If they would win that, things would look very different, and they would also look quite different if the Minkah Fitzpatrick, not offsides. Joe Hayden, not offsides. Field goal block that gets scooped and scored before the first half. That would change things considerably in the way that game tracks. And I know that that this is maybe a little Pollyanna for some. People want me to denounce Ben Roethlisberger. But what I've said the whole way here, they are hoping for a 2015 Peyton Manning Denver Broncos formula to work. Obviously, they didn't think that that would be sustainable for the next 3 or 4 years, but they thought for one magic year that that would be doable. Injuries and otherwise have undone that. A couple of big plays here and there go the other way. Listen, Roethlisberger's not making throws that he has to make, that he has made, and it's a recipe for trouble on offense when your offensive line can't block and your quarterback can't move. That's why I compare them to the 2015 Broncos. The defense needed to carry the day, but TJ Watt sat down for a couple of games. There's no run stoppers in there with Tuitt and Alu-Alu, and here we are at 1-3. And now we hear the rumors of benchings, and we'll get an update from that on Jason Luckin for in just a little bit. But dark times in Pittsburgh. But whether you want Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins or otherwise matters not. That is not what Mike Tomlin's going to do. This is not what stable organizations do, as a matter of fact. So wring your hands. This is where it is. And the big news is, the college pipeline remains rich, no matter how cynical people are about guys to draft there. There are plenty of viable guys out there. There are going to be some big-name free agents. And I'm looking for my list because I wrote them all down, and I don't want to leave anybody out, Eddie Spaghetti. But there are any number of guys that are going to be available in the college draft. They're going to have first-round pedigrees. They will be able to go get one of those guys if that's the answer there. I have some other ideas on that we'll get into with Luckin four. But quickly, Eddie Spaghetti, before we get to our guy Luck, let's talk about another loser, Urban Meyer. I mean, what in hell, man?
What's the story, though? He stayed behind in Ohio because he has restaurants there, and he was overly served at a bar, and then obviously had girls dancing on him, and then now he has to apologize to his family. Just like, I mean, that's the drawback. I'll from my perspective as a younger person, I think people should be able to go out and enjoy their drink and have a good time. And it does stink when you're a famous person that has basically a phone pointed at you at all times once you're in public. It's bad. But
have you had that? You've had that happen to you?
Well, no, but I'm saying that people. That
look, it says that Eddie Spaghetti.
It stinks. I think that's him.
Get the video. Shoot it. Yeah.
I feel for Herb in the sense that he's just trying to, like, you know, he's the team's 0-4. He's thinking like, well, I could have took a better college job, and Trevor Lawrence is not really working out early on. All these kind of things probably going through his head as he's sipping on his vodka or whatnot. And, you know, then you have a couple co-eds dancing on him and filming him, and it's just like it spirals out of control. Now his family's probably embarrassed, and like that's where he's wrong. But I do feel for the sense that you can't, there's no privacy once you're an A-list name, especially in
I completely agree. But also, as I always say, Daniel Day-Lewis crying about having to do to go out and promote his movie. Like, that's not why I got into acting. It's like, yeah, but you know that comes with it, right? Like, I know you want to just be an actor, but you could just go and do local theater somewhere if it's just the thrill you get from being on the stage. I mean, you signed on to make these movies. What's going through your head, Herb? I mean, why would you think that there aren't? I completely hear you. That's a kind of a different conversation. And I'm all for it, Spaghetti. I am all for we don't have to turn sports into Us Weekly or into the National Enquirer. But that is where it's gone. And if you're Urban Meyer, I mean, what the hell are you thinking, man? You can't. I haven't heard him complain. Like, how dare anybody do that? And now he's apologizing. And I like his excuse seems to be like, well, I wasn't dancing. They were dancing. I was merely the human pull. I can't control that girl sat down on my lap. Maybe I have the powers of a vampire and she didn't see me sitting there. So I can't imagine what's going through your head. And maybe the answer is there wasn't much going through his head because he did not look right with them bloodshot eyes.
Exactly what I was going to say. So I don't think Urban was thinking at all. I think by the pictures, the zoomed in shots of his face, it looked like that he had just nothing running through his head and the world was spinning and he had no idea what was going on. I think that's actually it.
Well, Herb might want to go back to college. Let's go to college real quick here. Eddie Spaghetti did not like me tweeting about it over the weekend, but facts are facts. A season after they should have gotten their shot in the Final Four, the Bearcats of Cincinnati are now in line to go to the Final Four so long as they can win out. They go up into South Bend and win a game that they were favored to win, which is crazy. I'm paranoid enough with the way the committee works that somehow their tentacles could reach the bookmakers and somehow being a home dog would inspire Notre Dame to victory or something. I don't know what I thought was going to happen there. I thought the Notre Dame was going to win. Instead, the Bearcats win. And now that means if they can win out, I think they're going to get into the Final Four. But the other interesting factor here is the Big Ten. By the way, Heisman update for you. Desmond Ritter, I think, is the play because if he merely runs the table here, I think you give him the Heisman over Bryce Young, who is your heavy favorite to get it. But if Ritter takes the Bearcats to an undefeated season, the standard is lower for him. I think they give it to him because the narrative sounds better than giving it to another Bama QB who it feels like at some point. It's like, well, yeah, you put anybody on that team, they're going to be productive. Desmond Ritter feels more like an X factor on his team. So plus 1,500, bet Desmond Ritter. And you know who's in the Heisman conversation making the board now? I think it's plus 4,000. One Kenny Pickett, the 17th year senior for the Pitt Panthers. And in that weirdo ACC, the Panthers are now favored over Clemson and otherwise to win the Coastal Division, which would just be bonkers if Pitt did that after they lost to Western Michigan 2 weeks ago. But the numbers do favor them getting there. I wonder if Kenny Pickett now tracks as even a first-round pick. I don't think he does just because of the bounty of quarterbacks like we talk about in the pipeline every year now. You know, whether it's Cincinnati or Penn State, I suspect, or Oklahoma, if they run the table. I mean, they keep playing with fire, Oklahoma does, but it feels like it's Bama / Georgia and everybody else. But what about the Big Ten, Eddie Spaghetti? You have Iowa, Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State all undefeated. And they've played teams. You know, it's not like this is where we've now transcended the cupcake portion of the college football slate. And they're all undefeated. And they all have longer odds to win the Big Ten than Ohio State does, the team that has the one loss. And Wisconsin, who looks like just abject garbage, has better odds than Michigan State does still. That's very weird to me. But I wonder if, doesn't it feel like with the Red River Shootout upcoming, Texas, we don't have a number even yet on FanDuel on that game yet. Intriguing because Oklahoma just, I mean, eventually they're going to get got. And then Texas ain't going to run the table, even if they beat Oklahoma, I don't think. So what's your bet? Cincy runs the table and gets the bid? Or do you think we might see actually two Big Ten teams get into the tournament, the four-game tournament this year? The four-team tournament, I mean.
I don't think we're going to agree on this because, I mean, Cincinnati should run the table the rest of the way because their toughest game entire season was Notre Dame in South Bend, and they accomplished that. Much to the help of Notre Dame just being the sloppiest team of all time. And I'm not saying this as a person with, I said all season long, Notre Dame would probably lose two games. It's kind of a rebuild year for there. They're juggling three quarterbacks. They just didn't pick the right one. They lost the game, whatever. But Cincinnati's schedule is pretty weak. They don't really impress me whatsoever. I'd rather have one loss teams in the Final Four than an undefeated Cincinnati. I'd rather have two Big Ten teams and two SEC teams. I don't think there's a shot that Georgia and Alabama do not make it. Right now they're locks. I can't see, unless they lose both their quarterbacks and they lose two games apiece, I don't see Alabama or Georgia not being 1-2. In terms of 3-4, I'd be fine.
Well, I mean, here's the path for Bama to miss out, though. And I wonder if they would jump, like, I mean, I'm vexed by the Final Four pretty much every year and the way it shakes out. But if Bama loses before the SEC title game and then they lose to Georgia, I could still see people saying like, well, but the SEC is so good, we should still put Bama in, and then I will flip out. Then that's when I'll really get PO'd. The thing that hurts Cincinnati, as a matter of fact, is, and you touch on it with Notre Dame, Indiana, my team, I mean, just this is a lost season. The injuries and otherwise have undone them. And the good news is for Hoosiers fans, Michael Penix can't go pro playing like this, so that means he has to come back next year. So that's your silver lining there, and hopefully he'll be right in 2022, you would think, or maybe he won't get the gig back. But the Hoosiers don't really count as a quality win right now, and if Notre Dame loses to UNC and they slip up once more somewhere along the way, then that doesn't count as that big a quality win.
Sure.
And therefore, it diminishes Cincy's, you know, alleged quality victories, you know, with power five kind of team. So I hear you, but I do wonder, and, you know, here's where the dominoes start to fall. And, you know, like I say, even where the Steelers are concerned, just to shout out to those teams and Seattle fans who are kind of looking up at things right now. And can we, you know, still figure a path to winning the division and everything? Divisional games are everything. Penn State is at Iowa. So there's one who's going to fall one way or the other. And that is how you get clarification. That's why college football is great, because every week is another chapter. And once you put a strike in the wrong column, it kind of you lose your power to claim that you deserve to be in that Final Four. And so those dominoes are going to start to fall. Right now, yeah, we're just barely in the conference play for the most part here. And so those guys are going to start to get knocked off. But I do wonder, with Ohio State still favored there, I mean, is that Michigan-Ohio State game, by the time we get to that point, is that going to be a swoony matchup between in college football's greatest rivalry, this side of Army-Navy? How say you? What's your final bet? Let's enter our picks now. Final four.
I just said Alabama, Georgia. I have as one and two. To me, I don't differ. You differ in the fact that you want the undefeated. You want those who completed a perfect schedule to get their fair shake at it. I personally do not think Cincinnati's schedule deserves to put them in the top four, just because a team like, let's just say, if Penn State or Iowa slips up this weekend, or if some Alabama slips up, you know, on the road at Auburn last game of the year, they slip up. Actually, they could slip up in College Station, Texas A&M on the schedule this weekend too. So I don't there when I see a good team, just because they have a single loss, does not mean in my mind that they don't deserve to be there, because their strength of schedule is that tough. So in summation, I'm okay with two SEC teams, and I'm okay with two Big Ten teams. If it's Ohio State who wins out and it's a Penn State who wins out, like with one of them with one loss, maybe, okay, I'll put both those teams in, because they have gone above and beyond pretty much every single week that I've watched them. The one wild card I would say is probably Oklahoma. I don't really love Oklahoma and the way they look this year, but they do go undefeated in the Big 12. They have to be in the conversation. Another team that I'm still kind of biased towards is Oregon. I know they slipped up for Stanford. Stanford probably a little bit better than everyone thought with the win versus USC and a win versus Oregon. But I still think a Pac-12 winner or a Big 12 winner does carry something if those teams win. So, I think what we're going to end up getting is an Oklahoma is going to be in there. The Big Ten winner, which right now, I don't know.
If Oklahoma loses anywhere along the way in that conference and they still get in, I'm going to be sick.
It's going to be Bama, Georgia. It's going to be Oklahoma, the Big 12 winner. And I think they're going to, and the Big 10 winner over Oregon, who will run the table. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say Penn State runs the table, and they're actually a for real team. And James Franklin does a good job, and
makes me sick. Believe me, I'm sick. I do not like seeing Penn State do well. They're my third. They make the winner stand of my most hated teams in sport, up there with the Islanders and Flyers. It gives me no pleasure. But that Penn State team is good. I just wonder if an undefeated Big Ten team loses to Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, do you then send both of them? And, you know, or maybe we just get Penn State and Pitt in the Final Four. That'd be all right if Pitt runs the ACC table.
I think the Big Ten scenario you just said, it could happen if Oklahoma loses. And I guess they favor, the committee says, well, the Big Ten team that lost to Ohio State is better or more, just like they deserve it more than a one loss Oregon or someone like that, who is a Pac-12 winner. Again, it comes down to who the teams you beat, but I think we'll see some variation of two SEC teams, a conference winner, probably the Big 12 winner, and then you'll see the Big 10 winner.
Here's what I say. It'll be two SEC teams because it always is. And so Georgia and Bama will go, and we'll see if I am chagrined by either when we get there. But spoiler alert, that's how it's going to go. Oklahoma will lose somewhere along the way. Oregon is undone by the quality of the Pac-12. I mean, UCLA, USC, and otherwise have not been good enough. So those don't count as great wins. I kid about Pitt. I think you're going to get the Big Ten champ. There's a chance you get a second Big Ten team, but I think it's going to be Cincinnati. Whoever survives the Big Ten, it's hard for me to divine who that is. I'll roll with Penn State here. I spiritually, I don't feel good saying that out loud, but I think Penn State. Now, you know what? I'll go Ohio State. I'll stick with Ohio State. Ohio State, even though they have that one loss, I'll say they go. And then that does create an opportunity, as you say, for Oregon. But then I say they do in the sense of justice. And like, this is untenable for us to keep putting Cincinnati on national TV against Notre Dame and Power Five conferences. And if they go undefeated, like, yeah, it doesn't matter, though. Okay. It still doesn't matter.
Zero issue with it.
They got to put them in. They got to do it, or else they got to, like, separate them and be like, you're playing for a different trophy, because obviously whatever, you can do everything right and it still isn't going to matter to us, because there's never going to be, things are never going to break in such a way that we're ever going to put you in. So pick up what we're laying down and change to some different division in college football, because we're not allowing you to, even though you're in this division, you're not really in this division.
Oh, well, we're supposed to penalize an Alabama who loses, say, on the road to Auburn, a ranked Auburn team, like, yes, in the last weekend, versus we're supposed to applaud Cincinnati for beating an up and down year for Notre Dame and like SMU as their quality wins. I mean, like, come on. I get it. Like, they're doing everything they could. It stinks, but it's like, it's unfair to penalize these teams who are, they're going through the gauntlet and they're playing top level teams week in, week out. I value that. I'm sorry.
I hear you. But the best thing is when people do the, like, hey, congratulations, Cincy, go take your whipping from the Crimson Tide. You're going to lose by 62 points in that game. Like, all right, who's doing any better against them anyway? Say that, like, the Bama and Georgia would appear capable of whipping just about everybody. But anyhow, let's move on from that. All those teams, a lot of juicy quarterbacks. That's the ray of sunshine, pro football teams. Don't worry. If you don't have your quarterback, you will have him in about 4 minutes, because the talent pool is rich in both free agency and in the college ranks. And that brings us to today's guests. First, though, let's talk about Thursday Night Football, shall we? FanDuel wants you to get the most out of every NFL game, and that includes Thursday. That's why they're giving everyone a $10 risk-free bet every week. All you have to do is bet the same game parlay with three legs or more, and if your bet doesn't win, FanDuel's going to pay you back up to $10. This is one of the many reasons we enjoy FanDuel so much: the fast payouts, the great site, so on and so forth, but most especially these kind of fun bets like the same game parlay. Let's put one together for you right now. Rams at the Seahawks. This is a dandy one in the NFC West. Seahawks are keeping themselves afloat with a big win in San Francisco, but now they need the win in Seattle. Here up come the Los Angeles Rams, looking to come back after a not a great performance against the Cardinals there. I'm going to take the Rams. That's one leg there, giving a point and a half on the road. The total is 54.5. That seems very heavy to me, although the Seahawks secondary is crummy, and Russell Wilson with those sexy deep balls. I think I'm going to go over 54.5. As they say, every Seahawks game is a weird one, so let's assume it goes over. And that aforementioned secondary that is lousy for Seattle, I'm going to say that Robert Woods gets one. Cooper Kupp's a little bit too easy, so I'll go with Robert Woods. And there you have it, a three-leg same-game parlay. Bet it, and make sure you do it, FanDuel.com/-3. That's the word minus the number three, and we'll see you in the winner's circle. Or maybe we won't. Okay, you can listen to them on 105.7 The Fan in Charm City. And on your TV, your laptop, and in your head on the CBS pregame, he's an O's loyalist and an eternal source for all things music. Huh? It's Jason Luckin for everybody. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, man? Good to be here.
Is it? Is it? You've walked into darkness here.
Hey, I'm no stranger to darkness. So,
well, hello,
without darkness, could there really be light?
These are the sorts of philosophical.
I read that in a fortune cookie once. Stuck with me forever.
I'm sure people, especially with you seated there in Baltimore, people especially appreciate your kind words on the banks of the Three Rivers. Let's jump into it, shall we? I hope we can have a chance to hear who you're listening to these days in music and get your tip on the AL playoff game upcoming here. But let's get into the AFC North. You made a fair amount of news on Sunday by saying that you're hearing whispers inside the Steelers organization that some people there would like to see Roethlisberger sit down and get replaced by Rudolph, Haskins. How say you? What's the score on this?
I mean, it's just reality, you know, and it doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks until Mike Tomlin thinks it's time. You know, no one has gone to him and ruffled any feathers. I don't think anybody will just yet. There are people who know the Rooneys, people who talk to the Rooneys, who feel like if this continues and you're sitting at a midseason bye, you know what I mean? Like how and before everybody splits for a few days, how would you not go to the head coach and say, are we sure about this plan? Are we sure this is the right thing? Where is Mason Rudolph? What makes sense for us and for all parties? And maybe that's a sit down with Ben as well. Clearly, this is not your normal. This isn't like the Bears yo-yoing with Justin Fields, right? There's a whole lot to this, many layers, a lot of loyalty. He's an iconic figure in an iconic franchise. But when you strip that away and you talk to people and you say, just strictly football, for where you are personnel-wise, for your limitations, for how you're constructed, does this make sense? And it doesn't. And it people understand why it's going on. And again, it's not like people are banging on Tomlin's door saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? He's Mike bleeping Tomlin. But I think it's going to go from whispers to what's the next tepid conversation to eventually a shout and maybe a shout from ownership because there are inherent problems in what they're trying to do right now. And there is nothing ascending about this player.
That's exactly right. And I want to, for what it's worth, I could be as flip-floppy or wash off whatever I said 8 months ago. In fact, I sat with you on your radio show. I think it was November, and you were already saying, can't you see it? You're blinded by the black and gold glasses you're wearing, Sheck. And I said, listen, I continue to say this. I just don't know what realistically could have been the plan. I advocated for Sam Darnold at one point in the offseason. I thought that might make some sense. I thought Matt Stafford was borderline doable. I think they would have lost out to Les Snead and the assets he was willing to give up. But I just don't see what the plan. I don't think saying in June or March or otherwise to Cam Hayward, Minka Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, and the rest, we're rolling with Mason Rudolph this year. And there wasn't someone to draft at that spot at 24.
Yep.
So this was always a transition year. I think they bet. My best read on it has been for a year is they were gambling on a 2015 Denver Broncos farewell Peyton Manning tour type of formula. The injuries to the defense have kind of undone that in the short term. And that's where we are. Am I misreading this somehow? Am I taking it easy on Colbert, on Roethlisberger, or otherwise with that?
They haven't had to think about this for 20 years, right? Like you're eventually going to get to a point where there's going to be a confluence of events that lead you to have maybe no great options and to maybe be kidding yourself about the degree that the options you have available might work. But like, it's the NFL, and like between the cap and this being the year the cap went down, and for eventually you're going to have to pay the due on a whole bunch of dead cap for this quarterback, right? Because I would be kicking the can like they did in restructuring every 2 years, but eventually he's at a point where you're not adding any additional years because we're beyond that, and you've got to take that hit. And unfortunately for them, they won too many games last year to be picking in an ideal spot. They're not going to mortgage everything for a lottery ticket to move up. You know, they did it for Bush. They did it for Minka to a certain degree. They're not going to do that again, not last year. And the quarterback had him by the you-know-whats because of the way the contract was structured. So he gives back the stay. They try to, you know, keep the band together for one more year. But it's not working, and it's not going to work. Like, it's hard to create a template for me where you lay everything out and I'm like, or not even to me, more to like people I talk to in the league, you know what I mean? Who are advanced scouting them, who are breaking them down. They're like, this is untenable, but if they want to do it, great. We'll beat them. So all of that. And I'm not saying I'm not a Mason Rudolph guy. I don't think Mason Rudolph is a starter, but like, this is about having a modicum of an offensive identity that might help those offensive linemen out, that might allow Matt Canada to actually get in a play calling rhythm. And like, you've got to make them defend the quarterback position to some degree, even if he's getting 5 yards where Josh Allen would have got 27. That doesn't matter. Like, that's 5 yards. Like, that's a starting point. Like, let him eat the cookies that are in front of him. Keep some drives going. It's an old defense. You got to find a way to keep that defense off the field. Throwing 20 screen passes to the running back and having him run for 3 yards a carry in a traditional offense ain't getting it done.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the confluence, like the Allegheny and Monongahela converge.
I was
for the mighty Ohio, the horribly named. Why does Ohio get the credit for that river? It's on the banks of the Three Rivers. Anyhow, yeah. Let's not go down that rabbit hole right now. It's a lousy. Lousy is not doing it the injustice it deserves. It is an atrocity, the offensive line, and you have an immobile quarterback. That's a formula for disaster. I just, again, as you hit on, there's no one in the building that I think plays better, although there's some missed throws on Sunday in Lambeau that you do think. It's not even the intermediate deep throws up the seam to Juju. It was the crosser early in the second quarter that Roethlisberger had Juju wide open that he misses him on that really was disconcerting as far as I'm concerned. But that said, to me, for little tweaks you might apply over these next couple of games before you get to the bye, I would throw Josh Dobbs at him. I mean, if Shanahan's going to do that in San Francisco with Trey Lance and Peyton's willing to do that with Taysom Hill in New Orleans, even to Drew Brees, I might try to throw a curveball.
Is he on IR though? I thought he was.
He is. But when he's right, I'm just talking little sub packages.
He would be the best fit. No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, he would be the guy who I would start cultivating if I could. Unfortunately for them, I don't think you're going to see him for quite some time.
Yeah, I don't think so either. All right, I do want to talk about your guy, Lamar Jackson, who for me is the human curveball ongoing. This is not somebody who people figure out, and my doubts about him going into the season have nothing to do with Lamar Jackson as a player. Rather, it was what appeared to me to be a diminished roster that was old up front defensively, some real questions on offensive line. Both of those things have more or less come to pass. Largely, there's been the rise, of course, of a couple of pass rushers. But overall, I think I've been right. And yet the Ravens keep on winning here. Here's my question for you, though. You're a baseball guy as well.
Yeah.
The comp that I throw out all the time is there are certain ways that win in the regular season that don't really translate into the postseason. Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine were finesse guys. They could put the ball wherever they wanted to. They could paint it black all season long. That was not good enough. Garrett Cole in the postseason is how you win. Bumgarner is how you win. Power pitching. Lamar Jackson's style, lends itself to fits for defenses across pro football. But come January, I continue to have my doubts, which puts the Ravens in a real weird place with contract negotiations and otherwise. Where do you come down now? I mean, they're obviously tracking well, still favored by a whisker over the Browns to win the North. I scratch my head about that. How say you, though?
Well, look, last week, a big talking point on our show in Baltimore, and after rewatching that game, talking to a few people, crunching the numbers, they're not, the 2019-2020 ground game is not going to be there. It's not going to be there because they don't have the tackles to do it. It's not going to be there because they don't have the running backs to do it. It's not going to be there because when you take away that elite athleticism, even a Lamar gets a little bit easier to defend. It's not going to be there because they don't want Lamar running 18 times a game to try to have to grind these things out. So the question then became, what are they going to be? And all I'll say is right now, the leader in the NFL in yards per completion by a pretty good margin over Aaron Rodgers is Lamar Jackson. The leader in air yards per attempt by about 2 yards over Aaron Rodgers is Lamar Jackson. If you want to stack the box against them now, they're not going to be able to run it on you because the scheme is not going to be the star the way it was before. But I do think there is an evolution going on, and his ability to manipulate the pocket to buy extra time and then still throw a pinpoint strike, whether he's inside the pocket by climbing it or outside of it by rolling, there's still magic there. There's definite magic there. And if they catch the ball, which has been a problem there for a while, it may still be. Because I don't think Watkins is not consistent, and Hollywood's not consistent, although he can hit some high notes that not everybody can. But we'll see what Bateman is. They really need a second move tight end. They've never addressed the Hayden Hurst departure, and I don't think that guy's on the roster right now. But regardless, I think that's what they're moving to, because you're not going to convince me that J.K. Dobbins averaged over 6 yards per carry last year. Like, going back to 2018, Gus Edwards, they had three guys since 2018 who are in the top five in yards per carry in the whole league. And number one's the quarterback at 6.11, right? And then you got Dobbins at 6.01. And then you got Gus, like, fifth in the league at 5.20. That's not Le'Veon Bell at this stage of his career. That's not Devontae Freeman. That's not Latavius Murray. And they're not getting back to where they were. So if we're now a 2,000-yard rushing team versus a 3,000-yard rushing team, where is the other 1,000 yards coming? If I call him a kid, he's still a kid. If this kid keeps doing what he's doing, and you tell me Bateman's a legitimate outside starting receiver too, then I'll say that gets them back to where they were. Is that enough to beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead with this defense? I don't think so. But will this be a team that's relevant in January? If they can continue what the gains they're making in the passing game, then I think so. The problem is, I don't know that Ronnie Stanley's playing another snap this year. Your guy, Alejandro Villanueva, was a great dude. He's no longer a starting tackle in this league by a long shot. And Andre Smith had to play a half of football last week, which is untenable.
And unfortunate for Lamar Jackson.
Unfortunate for all who watched.
Yeah, listen, I hear you. Except for Von Miller. But, you know, to the Ravens' credit, they went all in on Lamar Jackson, which I feel like you have to. You have to structure things around him. Yes. I heard years ago now that they understood within the building that their path to quality pass catchers was through the draft, that they would be hard-pressed to ever attract free agents to come and play in that system. Maybe that'll evolve. I think it's certain with them pot committed that Lamar Jackson, it's a matter of when, not if, that they're going to give him his deal. I think unless you want to go against that.
Nope.
The other one is Baker Mayfield. And we can debate Joe Burrow versus Lamar Jackson. And I am curious who you'd rather have for the next 6 years, say, between Burrow and Lamar Jackson. But Baker Mayfield, are the Browns going to – and by the way, I'm all in on the Browns winning the division.
They're the best team in this division on paper, no doubt about it.
I can't imagine that number continues to favor the Ravens over the Browns to win the division. Either way
– me neither.
But, I mean, the liability appears to be mediocrity at QB. Not an atrocity, obviously, but I really wonder if Baker puts a ceiling on them. And I also – do you hear anything about – when Odell Beckham, because if nothing else, he definitely is an energy suck. As great as he is, Baker, for whatever reason, it's starting to become not just a weird little blip. He's not as good when Odell Beckham plays as when Odell Beckham's out. Do you see that? Do you agree with that? And do you think that within the organization, they're saying like, boy, this is a great roster, but we better go deep in the playoffs and we're going to give Baker that big time second deal?
No, I think Baker's going to get a deal. Now, is it 35 or is it 45? That's a wide swath. You know, I think he's more of a 35. But with them having so little success for so long, if he does mess around and win a couple playoff games, does he end up getting the Josh Allen type money just because? Do I think he is a top 10 quarterback? No. Is he somewhere between 12 and 18? Yeah. Is that plenty good enough with them? Yes. Has he won over the locker room? Is he tough enough? Can he play in the weather, right? All the stuff that comes with Cleveland and the AFC North and all that mumbo jumbo. Yeah, I think he checks those boxes. Is he a fit with Stefanski? Yeah. Has he matured and grown up, right? When's the last time he said something stupid? It's been he learned. Stay out of other people's money. Stay out of other people's injuries. Stay out of other people's trade demands, right? Like he gets it. Don't say anything about the team doctor. Especially when it doesn't even relate to you. Like, that's gone. Like, I think that's gone when adults got in the room, right? And there's real checks and balances. So, no, I think he'll be there for a while. I think he's gambling on himself, and he's going to make a lot of money either way. I don't see them going with a younger quarterback at this stage. You're paying Garrett. You brought in Clowney. The defense is a lot better. The Odell thing, I don't know if there's enough of a sample size. I mean, I like the way they bled Odell in the first game back. This game against Minnesota, I think, you know, Zimmer knows Stefanski pretty well. I think they had their number a little bit in terms of what Stefanski wanted to do throwing the ball. So they relied on the two-headed monster at running back and won an ugly game. And they have the defense to do that now. So, no, I think Baker's a culture fit. I think the agents will probably be more realistic than not about his price point. But I don't see them looking to upgrade. You know, I just think the cost of doing business for them would be too high from a couple of different levels. And I think they, with the cap going up, with Stefanski being with him for a few years now, I think they want to keep their draft picks to start. I mean, it's like they're a first world team. They want to keep their draft picks to start letting the old guys go. And they don't want to pay anymore. And they're finding players now. So good for them.
It is a really interesting spot. And, you know, I happen to like Baker May. Daniel Jeremiah said this to me on the draft weekend. I said that, you know, all through for months leading up, Sam Darnold's the most talented guy in that class. You know, Lamar Jackson was probably undervalued in hindsight, but it was kind of that debate with the top two or three guys there. Josh Allen was a wild card as well. And he said, you know, Darnold's the more talented guy, but Cleveland as a city, as an organization, otherwise needs that swagger. So I'm a little sad to see Baker have to depress that stuff from a human standpoint. It's fun. I mean, as a Steelers fan, I don't love him if he's finger wagging in the final seconds of a game that they're about to win in Pittsburgh. But I like it if you're a Browns fan. I just wonder, though, because the numbers are hard to debate here. The magic window. Tom Brady, even in the Brady era, the magic window is a good quarterback on his rookie deal because it allows you obviously to flesh out the rest of your roster and pay other quality guys and really address luxury items on the rest of the roster there. Do you think everybody's up to speed? It doesn't appear to me that all organizations are up to speed on the fact that, and it's kind of my defense of where the Steelers are going specifically, is that we've reached full QB saturation in pro football. 6-7 years ago, I said, how in a world of 7 billion can we not find 32 human beings to successfully play pro quarterback? And now, 6-7 years later, coincidence or not, Jason, I don't know. Maybe it was my inspiration or otherwise. I don't know. Yeah. We don't have the fact. You can dig in with your resources and get to the bottom of if Damashek is the cause for this. But we now have more viable options at quarterback than we do have spots for them. And the talent pool in the draft every year, we've reached the place on the draft calendar where now people are hand-wringing about, I don't know if this class has anybody. Maybe it doesn't have Trevor Lawrence,
right?
But there are three to six guys that I can ID that have first round pedigree. Plus, tell me if I'm right about any of these names. I think Russell Wilson could be on the market next spring. I think Derek Carr, if Aaron Rodgers goes to Vegas, if he doesn't land in Denver, then he goes to Vegas, I think. By the way, weigh in on that. Any chance of Rodgers going to Pittsburgh? I think that's insane and impossible. But
there are a bunch of names
that are going to be out there that are good options for you. So this hand-wringing about there's no succession plan and the Packers did it right, like that didn't go well for them to draft Jordan Love. So anyway, are the Browns doing the best to roll back with Baker, who's going to, when he gets that contract, it's going to diminish the roster overall? Or is it wise in this period of free agency to just reboot every 5 years or so with your QB?
I would just say this. The Tampa Bay Bucs, what did they just do? They kept everybody, right? They're the first team in NFL history to bring back a Super Bowl winning team, to bring back all 22 starters. And it's not like they weren't a whole bunch of luxury items that they kept. And that was in a year where for the first time ever, the cap went down significantly. These guys are making $350 million a year just off these new TV contracts alone, right? We're just going to start see the gambling revenues trickle into the cap. The new broadcast contracts, they got a 10-year CBA. You can go cash over cap. It's a soft cap. I mean, I just think these are billionaires. And the commissioner will tell you overtly, we can't wait for the day till we have $25 billion a year in revenue. So I don't want to hear it. Like, where's it going? You know, how many teams really go cash over cap? Who's really pot committed? The Glazers were pot committed, no doubt about it. But Jerry Jones, you can go back to a window of 5 years when he's building his new practice facility and he's in the early stages of his new stadium. He's spending less money than Mike Brown over a 5-year period. So I just think we need to be a little careful about all the narratives that are out there. Cash trumps cap. If you're really willing to do it and you're a little bit creative and you've created a culture that the players want to stay, you know, I just think we had to be a little bit careful about giving these guys an out. Cause I'll just say, how did the Glazers do it? Like, how did it happen? Right. It happened.
Boy, that is a fascinating point you bring up there. Address for me. And then I do want to talk about one that the other sport that has gotten sideways because of its lack of cap or ability to constrain a half dozen or so organizations out there. But Aaron Rodgers, to me, if I were the Steelers, here's how you kill two birds with one stone, which is a weird cliche because I'd like to see somebody kill one bird with a stone. That would be the throw of a lifetime. Yeah. You know, if you could even
Randy Johnson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, good point. Touche. To me, Aaron Rodgers is silly and shame the devil, Steelers fans. Where's your dignity? Because your team is 1-3. Oh, Aaron Rodgers looked at Mike Tomlin. Well, have some self-respect. Now, I'm sorry, I got hot under the collar. Yeah. The answer is not Aaron Rodgers. Offer Gutekunst, who wants to get out from under this mess that they created, offer him a second for Jordan Love. That Aaron Rodgers stays for the next couple of years if you do that, right? Isn't that the solution for both teams?
If you like Jordan Love, I don't know. I don't know where the Steelers are on that one. I don't know what the next step is for the Steelers right now at quarterback.
Well, what about the Packers? Doesn't that make the Packers all right if you figure a way to get out from under Jordan Love? You don't need to retain a successor in this environment.
I don't know that
Rodgers
still wants to be there. You know, you're going to go through another disgruntled, you know what I mean?
But doesn't that make it right?
Of his discontent.
Doesn't that make it right though? Like, see, Aaron, we're committed to you. We got rid of the kid. All good now?
Maybe. I don't think that's how it's going to go down.
Oh, really?
No. Denver? I think this could be Denver. I mean, he's going to be able to call his own shot. I would say if we're just throwing darts here, if Seattle were to move off of Russell Wilson and get a ton of picks for him, but they still think their window's there and John Schneider goes way back with him to Green Bay. So who knows? There will be a domino effect to some degree. I'd be lying if I said I had sorted it out or even attempt. Well, I have thought about it. And I've thought about eventually writing a column on it, but not yet.
Oh, the QB carousel spins faster than ever, Luckin' Four. I don't know how you keep up with it at all.
You know.
As your side gig, although you keep your eye on the Orioles because it's your job too. I'm sorry for you that you have to do that.
It's all good.
I've washed my hands of the Pirates. I moved across the country so I don't have to suffer them on a daily basis. What's your pick? This has to suck for Orioles fans, the Red Sox and Yankees playing in a one-game playoff. although one of them will lose, is as you cracked wise before we got going here. What's your pick on that one on Tuesday night?
I guess I go Gerrit Cole, you know, in a big spot, I suppose. I mean, this format is cool. I don't have a problem with it. It would have been great if the Mariners or Blue Jays got in, but this is what it is. A lot of history there. So I guess Gerrit Cole. So, I mean, that's why he's there.
One of the wisest, he sits at the table of wise men when it comes to music. You, Matt Money Smith, love getting your tips. Tell everybody out there, what should they be listening to right now?
Man.
Anything you're on right now?
Nothing really new. I got to be honest with you.
No, but what's in your ears these days?
A lot of the same stuff that always is. I would just say if you haven't heard the Exploding Hearts, go out and find the Exploding Hearts and enjoy the Exploding Hearts for what they were and what they could have been.
Looking for us. See, he's always got a cool tip for you. He's seen pretty much every band under the sun.
No,
right?
It's been a minute. Last band I saw was Refused at the 930 Club in DC in like mid to late February of 2020. I have not been. I think I'm going to see Dinosaur Jr. in November in New York City. That would be my first show in almost 2 years. So that's
cool. Wow. There's been something getting in the way of live shows, but good stuff, Luckin' Four. Great stuff running the game.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. Best to you. Continuing
Have
success.
Fun out there. Absolutely. We'll chat. I'll get you on my show soon to talk some Steelers once they
What make are we going to talk about?
Pitch. Yeah, no, nothing. Nothing at all.
How high up in the draft they may get.
No meat on that bone.
All right, Pally. We appreciate
it. Take it easy, brother.
Thank you, man.
Okay, have a good one.
The great Jason Luckin' Four, everybody. Make sure you're checking him out, like we say. Afternoon Drive, 105.7 in Baltimore, Maryland. And I think he said it all there. Did you know that band there, Eddie Spaghetti?
I did not. Never heard of it. I know he's into like the punk scene, the DC punk scene.
Very big, yes.
I'm slightly into. Like I know like a Fugazi and some others I'm a little bit into, but no, he's pretty hardcore, literally and figuratively.
He's literally, yes. He and Matt Money Smith, that's where they park their cars in that same hardcore garage. They love the that OG sound out of DC and otherwise. Interesting stuff there, predicting that Rodgers, by hook or by crook, sounds like he's going to leave Green Bay. I'm surprised to hear that one. But the QB carousel, as we talk about with it, when it spins, there are then seats. It's musical chairs. I think as much as I, Derek Carr, we were recording this on Monday, so we don't know what is going to happen against the Chargers. Although I will tell you, I think the Chargers are going to win that game, and you can tweet at me or otherwise if I'm wrong, and I'll say I'm wrong. I think the Chargers take over the division and never look back starting tonight or actually starting in Arrowhead last week. But man, if Derek Carr, if you're the Raiders in 2022, spring of 2022, and you can get Rodgers and he would actually cost you less to acquire than signing a longer deal, say, I don't know, 3 years with Derek Carr. I mean, obviously, I think you would go with Rodgers there, and then that opens up Derek Carr, unless Aaron Rodgers goes to Denver. And then if he's in Denver, that opens up some possibilities as well around the league, and then Russell Wilson could move. And I mean, the hat you're wearing, Eddie Spaghetti, Russell Wilson, I'm just going to keep saying it till it comes true, is going to be on the New York Giants next year. Danny Dimes is not going to be their quarterback, I don't think. But I'll tell you also, fascinating stuff from Luckin' Four about the Buccaneers. That's absolutely right. If you want to make it happen, I guess you can make it happen. And I wonder how much of Brady providing some apparent discount is the key to making that happen. And also the magnetism of being on a team with Tom Brady also makes it easier to do than it is anywhere else. But interesting insights there. Either way, We will we'll wrap it up here. Good luck to the Yanks. Good luck to the Red Sox. Good luck to the Dodgers and Cards fans among us. And we'll see how all that turns out. And we'll get you right for the rest of the MLB playoff run, college football, pro football, all the rest of it. Make sure you're betting along with us. FanDuel.com/-3, the word minus, the number 3. And until Thursday, when we'll get the thoughts of Kevin Hench on all things Red Sox and Belichick and Brady and all the rest of it. Thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.